GalaxyCon Live is the place for you to hear about fandom from the celebrities who bring geek culture to life.
Welcome, friends and fans, to another episode of GalaxyCon Live, where we are bringing the convention experience directly to you. And today, we'll be visiting the perilous future with the cast members from the 100. So without further ado, let's bring out our guests, who will be sharing the same screen, so they will get both their introductions at once. He is an actor and director whose body of work includes Home and Away, The Strip, and Neighbors. Today, he joins us to discuss the role of the sardonic Bellamy Blake. Please welcome Bob Morley. And she is an actress whose credits include Pirate Islands, The November Man, and Neighbors as well. Today, she joins us to discuss the roles of Clark Griffin and as one of the hosts of the resurrected Josephine Lightburn. Please welcome Liza Taylor.
Oh, great. Good. Fabulous.
How are things in your corner of the world?
Pretty damn good.
It was fun to hear you introduce me as someone from Pirate Islands, which is a show I did when I was 11. It was cool. I haven't heard that in a while.
It was also funny when we logged in and someone said that we were Pam and Jim
from The Office.
Yeah, we're cosplaying for the convention.
Yeah.
It's a Saturday. A Saturday indoors. Might as well get dressed up for it.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Well, welcome to the GalaxyCon virtual stage. It's so glad to have you here. Our team's going through the chat room right now, pulling out the questions for you. In the meantime, I'd love to start you out with this. Just going back to the beginning, how did you come into these roles on the 100?
Oh, gosh. How did we come into them?
Your story's more interesting. Mine's pretty stock standard. I've got scripts, auditioned a lot of times. Then I got the role. But I was the first cast in the show. So yes. How about that?
And I was the last cast in the show. Yeah. Yeah. I was actually flat broke and packing my bags to go home to Australia after giving LA a shot. And then I got a call saying that I'd been offered a role in a TV series and I couldn't believe it. I unpacked my suitcase and that was kind of it. I went in for a meeting at Warner Brothers and bam.
I think I had to do like 8 auditions.
I'm sorry about that.
And you didn't have to do any.
I skipped that process.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe sort of say if you were kind of the first ones they locked in, maybe you sort of knocked down a lot of the barriers for everybody else.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's it's like with a jar. I kind of loosened it and then she just came along and popped it open.
Yeah. They were just like, okay, this guy. Oh, so let's go in this direction with the rest of the cast. Yeah.
Nice for you to say that. This guy's untested. Let's push him to his limits and see what he can do.
I got called in 12 times before they gave me a part. So that's showbiz, you know. Sometimes walk in, it's a formality, you already got it, we'll sign it your people, and sometimes you gotta go through hoops and hoops, and then the casting director changes halfway through and you gotta go back to the beginning. That's this business.
And sometimes the project just falls apart.
It's so true.
So we're very we're still shocked that we did 7 years.
Oh my god, yeah.
Pretty wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, actually going into it, like, you know, that was my first pilot. It was our first pilot. So, and it, you know, it got picked up and we were like, oh, I guess all pilots get picked. You know, this is normal.
Yeah. People keep going, this isn't normal that this happens. And we're like, what?
I was like,
I don't know how that works that way in Australia, but in America, not so much.
Yeah.
So it's we got lucky.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of luck, but there's also it's a case of, I call it the stars were right, where it was the right combination of talent in front and behind the camera. There was an opening and there was a fandom waiting to be developed. There's a lot of ephemeral things, but I will never call it all luck because again, talents like yourselves and those behind the camera and your castmates, you all just create this gestalt of something that works. And it absolutely worked. 7 seasons for high concept sci-fi. That's pretty respectable.
Yeah. It's pretty wild. Yeah.
And absolutely. And speaking of wild, as we all know, production on any sort of television or film can be trepidatious at best. Working with science fiction, those challenges are quintupled, I would fairly say. So I always love asking this for each of you. What would you say was your craziest day on the set of the 100?
Well, I know what yours would probably be.
What? What's mine?
I would say getting hung upside down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But some of them were just also like pretty wild in terms of everyone eating chips and being kind of programmed.
How about everyone eating people?
Oh, yeah. How's that?
There was a cannibalism moment in the show, as you do, you know. Yeah. Eating cubed people. That was pretty weird.
Yeah.
I wasn't a part of that storyline, thankfully. For me, you know what? Actually, yeah. It was, okay, I don't know if I'm going to get this right. Clark pretending to be Josephine, pretending to be Clark. Me playing Clark, playing Josephine, playing Clark. That was the sci-fi weirdness at its peak for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And again, this only happens in sci-fi. You're playing the character who's disguised as you, and then you had to crank it up.
I think the other one was kind of weird was when there was Allie, the AI that was in the scenes. And so she would stand there and she would not, like, she would try and hold her breath. So she was like perfectly still and stuff like that. And we would carry on as if she wasn't there. And then we'd shoot it without her, with her saying the lines. And it was just, this is all.
Only certain people could see her.
Yeah.
We had to, yeah, it was a bit of a mind.
There you go. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Well,
that's what you're looking for, right?
There you have it. Very good. Thank you for indulging my capricious curiosity. We're good going on audience questions. Before we roll our first one, I just want to say once again, thank you so very much for your contributions to this series. It's meant a lot to a lot of the fans. Again, you guys had a great run. So I thank you for your talents. I thank you for your professionalism. I thank you for the performances you brought to these roles.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And let's roll our first question from our virtual audience. And it comes from Lana. Ooh, when did you both start acting?
You want to go first?
Sure. When did I start acting? I mean, professionally, I started when I was 19, I think. Yeah. Yes, sure. 19. I mean, I did it all through school and stuff like that. And always kind of put on shows. I guess even being the youngest of four, I always was like a bit of a performer. But yeah, I didn't take it seriously, or I didn't know that I wanted to be an actor until I was doing a geological engineering degree at university. And there was one day where I was outside licking rocks to test the pH in rocks. And I went, I don't think I want to do this for the rest of my life. And then I had to kind of rejig and go, what is it that I really love doing? And I really enjoy performing. So that's when I decided to
pursue. Geology's loss is entertainment's gain.
There you go. Yeah. For me, I was, it was Pirate Islands, as you mentioned before. I was 11 years old. And yeah, my drama teacher suggested I go for this audition. You know, no one really expected me to get it. My parents didn't even know if I could act. They were like, okay, I guess you can go. But I got it. And I ended up, being one of the leads of a TV show as a little tiny 11 year old. And it was just the coolest thing for a kid, you know, obviously. Being a pirate show, it was just all about, like, fighting pirates and finding the treasure.
Oh, that
and,
would
like,
have been so fun.
It was like playing make-believe. And I just said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Absolutely.
I like how, though, you tell the story how when you went in for the audition and you came out and you were certain that you were getting the role.
I was like, I'm getting the role in front of, like, you know, 17 other young hopefuls. And my mum was like, shush. She was like, there's a lot of girls going for this role. And I was like, no, I'm getting it. You know, sometimes so you just cute. Know. Defiant little thing.
Wow. Was that your first audition and your first job? Wow.
Yeah, none of us are so lucky, but there you have it. A lot of great question. Thank you for starting us off with that. And what do we have next? From Nikki. I'm going to rephrase this. Have you found yourself in possession of anything from the one?
Well, yes, we acquired our show jackets from season one. I think
you did. Mine's season four.
Yours is season
four.
It was
the same jacket up to season four, right? And then it got changed.
Yeah. That jacket in particular is very sentimental, has a lot of sentimental value for me.
Your jacket?
Yeah.
Is yours from season one?
Yeah. It was my original.
Oh, and then they added all the little bottle caps to it.
No, they always had the bottle caps.
Even in season one?
I think. No. Oh, no, wait. No, you're thinking of a different jacket.
Oh, you're talking about the blue one.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And I also, on the last day of filming season seven, went into the props room and I found the little deer that Finn made Clark. Cool. In the two-headed deer that Finn made Clark. And I've got that. So
is that here somewhere?
It is.
Oh, you're still holding a flame for Finn. No.
Just the jackets.
No, you grabbed the jacket.
I grabbed the jacket for you.
Because I was already home.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Nikki. Fun question. Thank you for that. What's next? Hey, we got one from Megan. What scene was your favorite to film?
Oh my god! Out of all of them,
I think actually, still for me, it's probably some of the ones from the season one when Bellamy used to do big speeches and stuff like that. I always found that to be quite a lot of fun. I started off in theatre, so they had that theatrical kind of element to it. Yeah. And I always enjoyed doing that. And also because Bellamy was, you know, quite arrogant and very outspoken. And it was kind of fun. It was fun to play that guy who was hated. I enjoyed playing him that way.
Yeah.
And it was before everything became very heavy in the show.
Yeah.
There was still that Lord of the Flies type element to it. So I enjoyed that stuff a lot.
Yeah. For me, oh my gosh.
So many. I mean, we both do, but.
Okay. Stop drawing a blank. Focus.
Probably ones with me.
Yeah. I'll always love working with you. I had some. Like one scene that I really loved doing was actually with my dad in episode 8 of season 1. I don't know why. It's just a really simple scene where she's, I mean, she's messed up on drugs, but she hallucinates her father and they, before it all goes awry, they have this really beautiful moment. And there was something just so still and subtle and lovely about it. I always think of that scene.
Yeah, that like episode allowed our characters to explore like the more sensitive side and not be so pressed for like the plot active. And for things to be happening. So
yeah, there were some really nice moments in that episode. I think everybody watching this knows that we love that episode. We talk about it a lot. But then another one for me was in season 6 where we were in the cave and I was Josephine.
Oh, yeah.
And then I snapped back into being Clark.
Oh, yeah.
That was a really cool, fun scene. I really enjoyed that.
You're very good in that one.
You didn't very, lie.
No, you were very good. I remember after that scene, I was like, holy crap, you're quite good. I always thought you were good. I always thought you were really talented. But in that particular scene, I was like, oh, wow, I like just kind of shifting like that and just seeing it in your eyes. I was like, she's very good.
Megan, great question. Thank you. Hey, what's next? Here's one from Di. Have there been any pranks on the set of the 100 that you feel comfortable sharing on this forum?
Oh, you know what? There was a big prank war between Richard and Lola.
Yeah. That kind of took place offset though, didn't it?
Like I mean, yeah, it wasn't. It was offset, but it was intense. It was like next level prankage. I mean, it started with Lola, I think. I don't know if it was Lola who started it or Richard, but she put, you know, the old saran wrap under the toilet seat thing, you know, everybody knows that one. Classic. Got him pretty good. Yeah. And then it was Richard's turn for revenge. And what I believe he ended up doing was roping her mother into it, getting access to their hotel room. He basically put all of her stuffed animals in, like hung them from the ceiling, I think.
Whoa.
And one of them had the chest cut open with stuffing coming out of it.
No way.
So that when she walked into her hotel room, it looks like there'd been a massacre, essentially.
Of plush toys.
Of plush toys. It was next level. I don't know what she did after that, but she was very impressed with him. Yeah.
Remind me never to piss them off. All right, there you go, Di. That was a fun one. That took us some interesting spots. Oh, yeah. This image of stuffed animals hanging. Stuffed animal abattoir. From Oakley and Teal, what was the biggest takeaway that you felt from your characters on the 100?
Wow. I think I learned from, you know, from what my biggest takeaway was basically what Clark was struggling to achieve, and that was letting go of the past and being able to forgive herself. You know, there was the last three or four seasons, she was so heavy with guilt and shame and a loss, a grief. You know, it was really heavy. And I think what one thing that I took away from it is you know, how important that ability to let go and to forgive yourself is.
Yeah, I think that's true of it. And like for me as well, like especially
For most of the characters, really.
Yeah. And I think even years after now, and we were just talking about before coming on this panel, I was like, geez, that was such a heavy show. Like those kids went through so much. There was so much trauma.
Yeah.
And I think that when you're living in that world for 7 years, like personally you go, oh, wow, that was quite heavy. And, you know, I wish they did have that chance to grow and move forward and to let go of things and to forgive themselves. But yeah, that's probably something I take from it. It's pretty heavy stuff that they went through.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. And there you have it, Oakley and Teal. Great question. Thank you. And what do we have next? From Mimi, what was your most memorable time from working on the 100? And what did you learn from that experience?
Well, most memorable time.
I mean, there's so much that I learned from the show. Yeah. It being our first like American production, a lot bigger than most of the stuff that I worked on in Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, went through the Warner Brothers Director's Workshop, got to direct on that, the show. And, you know, that's something that I'm continuing to pursue now. And like, there's so many great things that I've learned from that. But I think on any set, you kind of learn, you always pick up something new, a new skill to add to your craft or whatnot. The 100 was just full of a lot of those. It was like a very tough show. There was long hours in really trying weather.
Mm.
And yeah, I don't know. Like there was a lot of growth that came from that show outside of it and what I learned about myself more so than anything. But it was life-changing in a lot of ways. But what was the most memorable? It almost goes without saying, but obviously like this is the most memorable thing, getting married to Eliza and working with her and getting to know her over all those years and stuff like that. That's like, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty.
That kind of goes without saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I learned a lot. I think, you know, there was, you know, being the lead of a show for the first time was a really big responsibility. It was something that I definitely felt like, you know, I had imposter syndrome for quite some time. Like, I don't think I can do this. I, you know, when are people going to figure out I can't act? You know, just silly things that go through your mind. Over the years, learning to trust myself and like myself and trust my choices and to really enjoy that responsibility, to go to work with pride and to feel like I deserve to be there was a big learning curve for me. I'm glad I got there in the end.
A follow up on that, Bob, what did it come about when you were like, hey guys, I'd like to direct?
It was actually the opposite. I was asked at the end of season one to direct and I said no for about 4 years.
Really?
I think because I have the tendency to question things a lot if they don't make sense or why we're doing certain things a certain way. So, you know, I think that I'd shown that I had some interest in it, or definitely was interested in how and why of it all. And then, yeah, I think it was just before we started season six and Jason's like, that's it, I'm getting you to direct and I'm putting you through this course. And then that was it. I was like, yep, okay, cool, let's do it. And yeah, I mean, you know, like there are certain people like that you go, okay, yeah, I understand why you would want them to be directors. I think Eliza, if she had the chance to do it, would have been great. And she has directed since. And for me, it's actually, I don't know, like going forward, it's definitely something I want to do. And if I could, I'd rather jump on that side for the rest of my career. But we'll see. We'll see.
But then people wouldn't see your beautiful face.
You know, there are plenty of fine actors who are also fine directors and they're able to do it at the same time. So no reason you can't go for it. And Mimi, thank you. That was a wonderful question. And what do we have next? From Clarkley, can you tell us about your movie together?
Yeah, I mean, there was a press release recently, so it finally has a title. It's called I'll Be Watching. It is a bit of a sci-fi thriller. It was really fun because we get to play husband and wife, but seriously dysfunctional version of ourselves.
Yeah.
So that was really fun to play with. It's, you know, it's all kinds of over the top and intense and we love that. I mean, coming from the 100, it was no stretch for us. And yeah, it was just really great to work together again.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to work together again and, you know, to kind of slip into that genre, which we've both done movies in before, yeah. But it was really fun to get back into it and to do an indie as well.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. And it's kind of more about just working together as a team and collaborating. Mm. So that was kind of fun. A big difference to working on, you know, like a studio TV show.
Yeah.
And getting onto an indie, liberating in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
And what's the title again?
I'll Be Watching.
I'll Be Watching. And it's recently been given that title, huh?
Very recently. Yeah.
Is there a release date on it yet or?
Not that we know of yet, no. But I'm sure
they're shopping it around.
They're in that stage. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll keep our eyes peeled. And Clarkley, thank you for that. Good one. And what do we have next? Here's what Elizabeth. What was the hardest part about ending the filming of the one?
I'm going to just say COVID.
Yeah, that is exactly how it ended. It was, yeah, it basically, I think our end date was like between the 18th, no, I think it was the 17th maybe of March 2020. Every other production in Vancouver had packed up and
I was back in LA finished. And I was like, you might I was like, I don't know if you're going to get home because they're going to shut the borders.
Yeah, it was a really bizarre way to end such a momentous, like, part of all their lives. Like
you guys had to kind of pack up and...
There you go.
That's a wrap, everybody.
Yeah. It's like you guys had to pack up and get out of there.
We really did.
Really quick.
Yeah, it was... I mean, we were supposed to shoot for, like, 3 days. We had to compact everything into one Saturday. And so it was a very long day and people were scared, you know, like people didn't feel like we should really be still be working, but we wanted to finish the show. And we also didn't know
how
serious this was or what, you know, we were very soon to find out. But yeah, it was just kind of like a mad rush and our wrap party was cancelled and people who were flying in, to like the writers and everyone were flying up to Vancouver to say goodbye, couldn't come anymore. And so it just felt like the end of a kind of a rushed day. It didn't feel like the end of our show. It was bizarre.
Yeah. There's no closure. It just stopped.
It just stopped. I mean, we did do like some nice speeches at the end and everything, but yeah, I think, you know, everyone was pretty keen to go isolate.
Yeah. I did one show in Chicago and then, I'll see everybody in 2 weeks in Seattle. And then it just started and then, no one.
Yeah.
And that's what led to the evolution of this, the GalaxyCon virtual stage. And we're on with this. This is just part of our regular thing now, as well as our virtual shows.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth, there you go. Thank you. Great question. Well, yeah, a sad answer to a good question. Do you think you would survive an apocalypse?
Absolutely not to this question. But, you know, I'm in my 30s now. I'm feeling a little...
You got your job.
You know, we
and
we
you
actually,
used an impact drill the other day.
I used a drill the other day. I am, you know, like
yes,
a
you can
very capable woman now. But I feel like we would do all right if we were in the right place, which would be our farm in Australia. If we were on our farm in Australia, which is in the middle of nowhere, I think we would be able to live off the land for a while, unless, you know, some sort of nuclear thing kills all our plants. I don't know. There's so many variables, but we do have a spring-fed dam, so we wouldn't run out of water and, you know, we'd have chickens. And
so you're a good place for a plague apocalypse, a zombie apocalypse. Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's like a nuclear war type apocalypse and then everything's going to fall apart, then digging down and bunkering in, that's
we don't have a bunker.
That's the type of apocalypse where I would say, why would you want to survive that?
Exactly.
That's that one we're not gonna get through that one.
If I can't have air conditioning anymore, then I'll check out with the rest of the world. And thank you, Lou. Fun question. Let's roll another one. And here's one from Nolan. What is the scene that is most moving for you?
Oh my gosh. It was this scene with the dad and daughter. Is that season one?
Season one, episode 5, I believe.
Oh my God. This guest actor came in and just blew us all away and made us cry like crazy. It was just the most beautiful storyline. He basically sacrifices himself to save, you know, his daughter, right?
Yes. Yeah. Running out of oxygen as the culling of the 500.
It made me cry uncontrollably. And it still makes me emotional.
It was quite beautiful. It was beautiful. That guy did a great performance.
Oh.
I saw him turn up in something recently. I feel terrible. We don't know his name. So we can give him the kudos he deserves.
I'm going to find out.
Yeah.
If a super fan in our chat room can figure that out for us, let us know and we'll give you the props for it.
Yeah. Terrible.
What about your most moving?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that. As you were saying that, I was good that you brought that up because I was about to talk about one of my own and what a bloody idiot I would be. One of the things that I did was amazing. Anyway, carrying on. It was that guy. I think that was, I mean, season one's my favorite. So.
Yeah, mine too.
There you have it. Thank you, Nolan. Fun one. What do we have next? Here's one from Dre. Oh, what was your favorite set from the 100?
Oh, well, I don't get asked, so I don't have an answer yet. Oh, favorite set.
I know what my least favorite was.
Yeah, that's it.
There's a lot of least favorites. The dropship, that was a nightmare. You know, cramming like 100 people into that little dropship.
It was small, yeah.
It was stinky, sweaty, and gross. So not that one. Remember, I don't know if you're in this scene. You might have been where we were in the drop ship season one. And all the grounders had to come up through that one little hole into the drop ship.
Oh my gosh.
And they were talking like big guys like Alex Pornovic and Ty Olsen trying to squeeze through this little thing, and it was just like, this is a joke. This is ridiculous. That's my least favorite set. My favorite set was probably just, cool. It was awesome. Yeah, it was such a big set, and it was like so fun. And I think it was one of the biggest sets on in Vancouver.
Yeah, Polis was built out. There was like a sort of shanty town built outside.
It was like
by this beautiful river, and it just, oh my God, it was insane. It was like you walked through it and you could kind of forget that you were in the real world. It just transported you into the 100 world, and it was fantastic.
But the Great Hall was such a pain to shoot in.
Like the Great Hall. No. Not a big fan of Sanctum.
No. Sanctum. Yeah, Sanctum itself. Mm. Sanctum was kind of a nice place.
It was actually, yeah, it was a nice
a lot
place.
Of comfy places to sit.
That's true.
Yeah.
A lot of cushions.
That's what you're looking for in a set.
Thank you, Dre. Good one. What's next? From April 2, if you could act in any genre of movie or TV show, which one would you choose if you could write your own ticket?
I think, like, we've kind of almost dressed for it in terms of, like, us looking like we're from The Office.
It's I would like, love to be Pam and Jim.
Yeah. That looks like it'd be a lot of fun to do.
Yeah.
A comedy like that. Even though I'm terrified of doing comedy, it would just be, it seemed like it'd be fun.
Yeah. After doing It Only Takes a Night, I definitely want to do more comedy. It's fun.
I've seen bits of it and she's really funny.
You know, when I have an answer for that, I will let you know.
I'll be the first to
know. You will be the first to know. You will. And then I'll let you guys know as well. Patty, I'll text you.
Please do. And we'll gladly reshare that and GalaxyCon social media and all that fun stuff. And there you have it, April 2. We get this question so often, we made a special graphic for it. This is from SVVL. If any fictional universe or fandom could cross over with the 100, which one would you choose? So you can do a fast up of the 100 in Star Wars, the 100 in the world of Shakespeare, the 100 in the world of the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh my gosh.
I would, I would think it'd be funny doing, the 100 in The Office.
Yeah. Actually, do you remember when Devin was trying to do that?
What?
In season one, Devin Bostick was, Jason vetoed it. But
me and Devin started shooting.
Oh,
you both did. Yeah,
yeah.
We started shooting this thing called The Tent.
The Tent. Yeah. And it was kind of like an office format.
Yeah, where we would go, me and Devin shot some stuff where I was in there as Bellamy talking about what happened at the camp and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, and it was really funny. Like, the permission was asked.
If we could release it as like a little little feature type thing.
Yeah, which would have been so good, but it unfortunately did not.
They were like, that's not in the vein of the show.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
But it was
me and Devin shot some stuff and it was about called The Tent. So it was like Jasper. It was like as if Jasper was holding a little TV show inside of his little tent at the camp. And yeah, that was when me and Devin lived together and we were like, yeah, we should do it. Let's just do it.
Let's start that hashtag now, the 100 tent.
Yeah.
100 tents, and maybe we can get that as an Easter egg on the next release in physical media. It's been long enough now. People know what they're in for the show. So, yeah.
I remember we storyboarded it and everything, and we had episodes sorted out and who we were going to get in to do certain things.
I came in and did an interview in the tent.
But footage is out there, and just from that description, I sure as heck want to see it. So, all right. So that's Bob crossover. Eliza, you going along with The Office, or maybe something else you'd like to see the 100 combined with?
I can't think of anything.
You would want to see it in like the 100 characters doing MasterChef.
Oh, I mean, that would be fabulous.
Yeah.
I love cooking shows, addicted to them. Throw in some Gordon Ramsay. I'm sweet. You know? But yeah, I mean, sure.
I mean,
let's say
world. I'm just offering suggestions.
I like it. Let's go with that.
All right, there you have it. SVVBL, fun one. Thank you for that. What do we have next? From Joseph. Ha-ha, if you could be a contestant on a game show, past or present, what would you like to be on?
I'd probably want to be on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire because it's multiple choice and I tend to be quite good at guessing multiple choice even when I don't know the answer.
You think you can read the host?
Yeah.
You think you'd break them down and read the host and then $1 million?
That's right.
Because you're good at reading people.
Yeah.
Okay. There used to be a show in Australia. I don't know if I ever made it out to the States, but it was a show called Gladiators. and you would take on, remember that show?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd take on these big, like, buff bodybuilders and you'd be doing all these, you know, agility things. But that aside, I would like to have a go at some of the stuff on Wipeout because I think it'd be
We had gladiators in the late 80s, early 90s, and of course it was called American Gladiators. And
they're
guys and gals
run up a pyramid or something, or there'd be the gauntlet where they'd try and stop you. You have to wear crappy kind of leotards, but that's all right. But I do think Wipeout could be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And now that I've seen it, probably that Holy Moly golf thing would be pretty fun too. The putting one with the, you know, we watched a couple of episodes.
Oh, yeah, we did too.
It's Wipeout meets mini golf. Yeah, mini golf.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
There you have it. All right, Joseph, very fun one. I think we got time for one more, so let's see if we can go out on a really fun one. And this comes from Holy. If the two of you started a band, what would be the name of the band? And I'll add on to, and what kind of music would it be?
Oh my God.
Wow.
I don't know. I recently, in my computer game that I'm playing, where I had to make up a team name, called myself Panda Enterprises.
Panda, that sounds more like a conglomerate than a band.
Could be, but that's what we are. We're going to take over the world with our music and our beats.
Okay, that could be the record label, Panda Enterprises.
Panda Enterprises presents. We don't really have a name. We don't get around with a name. No.
No, it'd be strange if we did.
It could just be Bob and Eliza, you know, or Eliza Bob, you know, however you want to do it, you know.
Yeah.
It could
be as simple as that.
I was thinking something quintessentially Australian, like Soy Flat White. Which is a type of coffee.
Which we've been drinking
a lot of coffees lately.
Soy Flat White is a great name for a band.
Okay.
That is, actually.
I think, we tend to sing and play like folksy type music.
But let's pretend we could play anything, I think it would be a cross between Jewel and Tool.
That's the weirdest combo I've ever heard.
Yeah. It would probably sound like one of those, like, what is that? I've forgotten the name of that band. Like,
I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, no. Let's
stick with folk music.
Yeah.
Yeah, lock it in, Patty.
Yeah, there you go. You're bringing the folky movement back. I love it.
Well, I like this Vegemite on toast has been a suggestion.
Oh, that's a great suggestion.
Yeah.
All right.
Smashed avocado.
There you go. I mean, as an American, let me ask you guys this. All right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know of Vegemite. Some of us have been lucky enough to see it. Is it really as prevalent to Australian cuisine as we have kind of interpreted it as? Like, we picture you guys, you put it kind of on everything once a day.
Okay, we don't put it on everything, but it is very important to us Aussies.
It is. It's like it's more prevalent than you guys think kangaroos are. Like no one rides kangaroos to school, but you'll probably have Vegemite on toast every morning.
Every morning, yeah. But just on toast.
I'm in Florida, and I have to tell people, like, no, the gators are not.
That's not true. So you do. You ride gators all around Florida. That's true.
Okay, fine. You caught me. There you go.
You're on a gator right now.
We have it in the house. We love it. Bob makes his own sourdough, so it's we have Vegemite on toast here all the time.
So yeah.
All right. I've seen Vegemite. I'm not sure. I've never had been daring enough to try it, but Bob, I'll try your sourdough anytime you want to bring it over.
Yeah, with Vegemite, obviously.
All right, there you have it. Holy, great question. And GalaxyCon viewers, this has been my time with Soy Flat White. Please head over to galaxycon.com. And while you're there, we invite you to check out our schedule of upcoming events just like this one. Guys, it's been an absolute delight. Any final words before we take our leave?
No final words. We're just really excited to hang out with you guys. That's it.
That's about it. Yeah.
It's all good. It's been my absolute pleasure to host you all again. Once again, thank you for joining us on the GalaxyCon virtual stage. Thank you to our audience for joining us, and thank you for your great questions.
Thank you for having us.
It is pleasure was all ours. Until then, bye-bye, everyone. Take care, and remember, smiles are free. Spend them often.